anger. Anger. That is really, you know, a very broad subject, even in the Bible, because there are lots of places in the Bible, and I don't have the references and, you know, that we could go to them all, but you can think of some, I'm sure. Not only where scenes are described that we might say, well, that was anger, but actually the word is used. You know, the Bible describes somebody's anger, and it's not a negative. You know, Nehemiah, things happen to Nehemiah, and says that he became angry. It's not a negative thing. But then there's other situations where anger is a very negative. And, you know, a couple of classic positive things would be, number one, is that God is described as being angry. The wrath of God. That's God's anger. And so there's you know, anger by itself, by strict definition, cannot be evil because God can be angry. Jesus Christ, though, the word may not be used saying that he's angry, clearly became angry in the temple and cleansed the temple. I mean, whatever we imagine occurred there as we try to visualize what that was not a real gentle setting. You know, that's a pretty pretty strong kind of a setting that was there when he you know, chases people out and turns over tables and so forth. But then on the other hand, we're told that, you know, anger is, you know, this is not something that's godly. This is not something that's coming from God. This is something that comes from the flesh. This is sin. So obviously when we talk about anger in the Bible, it has this very large range. Anger can be something that's negative. Anger can be something that's positive. Anger can be something that's associated with sin, and anger is something that can be associated with God. Anger also can be one of these things that's a very much of an action kind of a word. That one is angry, that has to do with a mindset to seek revenge, things like this. It's you know, not an emotion, it's a mindset. It is an attitude, it's an action there. But then when we think about anger, often it's an emotion. And so as an emotion, emotions aren't necessarily good or bad. They're just emotions. So when we think about emotions, that somebody becomes angry in terms of an emotion, that shouldn't necessarily be read in these passages because they're not necessarily talking about emotions. But then, as you're aware, emotions don't always just stay in a vacuum. Emotions lead to something, and then that can be there. But this evening, we want to look at two passages that are in a same general context, and that's what makes them so intriguing. And that's in Ephesians 4, 26, and then in 4, 31. In Ephesians 4, 26, it's a transitional passage, really. If you look at verse 24, for instance, back up to, say, 22, that in reference to your former manner of life, you lay aside the old self. And I'm going to understand old self to be a reference not to old sin nature, but old self being a reference to your former unregenerate self. So this is who you were as an unbeliever. Lay aside the old self, so that's all those unregenerate kinds of things, which is being corrupted in accordance with the lust of deceit. And that you be renewed in the spirit of your mind and put on the new self, so that would be who we are in Jesus Christ, which is in the likeness of God, has been created in righteousness and holiness of truth. Therefore, laying aside falsehood, and we start from there that in verse 25, 26, 28, 29, we have these dual passages, put off something, put on something. So in 28, it says, laying aside falsehood, speak truth. 26, be angry and do not sin. 28, let him who steal no longer. 29, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such as word is good for edification. And so you have this put off something, put on something kind of a passage built on this foundational passage of who we are in Jesus Christ. But the second one in verse 26 is, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. And then verse 27, and do not give the devil an opportunity. Well, this very first part of this statement, be angry, is a quote from Psalm 4. In Psalm 4, verse 4 in the English Bible, we read, tremble and do not sin. And that word tremble is a word for anger. it's a picture word as it's translated here. Tremble has the idea of shaking. But this is trembling in the sense of that one is so agitated that you're shaking. So it's not just tremble in the sense of being nervous, but tremble in the sense of being almost like visibly upset about something. But in the Greek translation of the Old Testament, it's exactly what we read in Ephesians. And so Paul is clearly quoting from that passage when he says, be angry. And in that passage, is that the psalmist is advising, the adversaries to keep their rage within themselves, to maintain control of their actions and, but here he says, be angry. Well, anger is, as I already mentioned, there's nothing intrinsically evil about it because it is something that's used of God. But the anger as we view it, if an anger that's not kept under control can lead to sin, as lead one to miss the mark. So there's an anger, because that's not sin, that's because God has it, but God is able to always keep it under control. And obviously the issue with mankind is we don't always keep it under control. So in some sense, here we're looking at a disposition of anger, an attitude of anger. Be angry, but do not sin. So sometimes it's thought of, to make clarifications, talk about this as a righteous anger. Those things that are appropriate to be angry about. What would be some things that's appropriate to be angry about? Okay, just injustice. Just because injustice too, whatever. That there's some injustice. And if you read of, hear of, witness an injustice, then that's an appropriate response is anger. What else? Okay, child abuse, which would be, in one sense, anything we say at this point will be a corollary of injustice because that's a broad umbrella. But you get specific, the ones that those kind of injustices that might really trigger stronger emotions or the sense of anger. Child abuse, because there you're looking at injustice to the very helpless, the most helpless. So yeah, child abuse. And I think many people in that regard, when you hear a small baby, something happening to them that's just horrific. That one gets you. What else?
I get angry when I hear false teachers.
Okay, so there's a sense of somebody that is another form of abuse, if you would, but and maybe abuse in one sense is not the same because he's not helpless, but it's an abuse of God's word, an abuse of that, a twisting of truth. And and I think we could see that scripturally, just the way that writers write and how strong they are, Paul at times, and John, how strong they are when they address those things. We could see that also, that they, that. So you can see there's areas, and you could go on and on and on and on, coming up with example. But there are things that when you hear about them, it's appropriate to be angry. Anger, a righteous anger. Now, obviously, whenever we use a term like righteous anger, we need to be really careful, because that's an easy one to, you know, self-justify yourself. You know, like, it's okay that I'm angry because I'm righteous, or because I'm angry, that surely is a righteous cause, and so anything I'm angry about is righteous, and we have to be really careful of that. But there's an appropriate anger in that regard. You know, as mentioned earlier, the classic example in the Bible would be Jesus in the temple, where people are abusing the temple, abusing God's provisions. So it wasn't just that something false was in the temple, but it was also an abuse of the whole system. So here it says angry, do not be angry. Now, as we look at this, there's some possibilities. One is this talking about a condition? For instance, is it saying, if you get angry? It's looking at a condition here. You know, if you get angry, be sure you do not sin. While that logically might make sense here, it would not seem to fit, because there's a conjunction that's used in the sense of linking two equals, where it's saying, you know, be angry, but do not. So condition doesn't seem to be it. The next one is permission. Could it be that it's a permission? Be angry since you cannot help it, but don't sin. So since you're a mere human, you have the permission to be angry. Just make sure you don't sin. But once again, it's you're trying to have two different uses of an imperative here, and have a conjunction that's linking them. So there's undoubtedly that it's a command. Both of them are commands. Be angry, and also the command, do not sin. And they're joined by this, joined equally by the conjunction. But it's not a command that should be understood that you're required to be angry, especially that because it's in the present tense that you're required to always be angry. So you could try to make something out of that, and some may have, saying, be angry, and it's a present imperative, therefore it's saying you continually have to be angry. But that makes no sense at all, and wouldn't be required by it. Rather, it would be in the sense of there's an occasion calling for angry. So, it's a repeated action. You know, be angry in the sense that that may be a repeated action. So it's present tense, ongoing, in the sense that it's repeated. So it almost for us would be, when the appropriate occasion calls for anger, be angry without sin. So there may be those occasions. Moving on, the second half, it says, but do not sin. Sin here, is that broad word for sin of missing the mark, going astray. So it's true that God at times is angry, but He's always in control. So unlike God, that's the issue for us, is sometimes we allow the anger to take control. And that's where we, are in trouble. And that's where this second command is necessary. And really the idea here, the spirit maybe, is back in verse 2 of chapter 4, where it says, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, showing forbearance to one another in love. And that word gentleness is, in an older translations, would be the archaic use of the word meekness, which meekness has fallen on bad times, so it's not a good word to use anymore to communicate. But that word for gentleness, Aristotle defined it in sense of a means between two extremes. So it's the idea here is it would be to always be angry at the right time and at the right things, and never to be angry at the wrong time. And so this sense of but do not sin, would go within that. So be angry. So what we're looking here is there's a proper things to respond in anger, but even though it's proper, if we're not careful and let the anger take control, then it becomes sin. Then all of this is limited by the next clause that says, do not let the sun go down on your anger. Now, one thing we should see here is that it limits the anger. But we shouldn't I think it would be a mistake to see this in a very wooden sense of saying, okay, sunset is the absolute gauge. So sunset's going to be in about 10 minutes, and if we get angry right now, we only have 10 minutes to resolve it. It's too bad we didn't even get angry at lunch, because then we'd have had 7 hours to resolve it. That cannot be what the picture is, but rather it's looking at timeliness. If you're gonna resolve it by sunset, you're saying you're gonna keep everything current. You're not gonna let things linger, and so there's something about the idea that even when there's an appropriate anger, appropriate response at anger, you have to deal with it. And that dealing with it is one of the positive things with anger, even the emotion of anger, is it alerts you to a situation. It may alert you to something to take action. It's a motivator to take action. So, for instance, you hear about child abuse and you became angry. Now, the issue for us is there an appropriate action we can take? If it's on the news, and it's a news report that somebody's been arrested for this, well, there may not be any action we can take. There may not be any action that's needed. But if it's a report of something, about whatever, a child care center or something like that, then maybe the action that you write your representatives and say, we have to have stronger laws, you call people. But there's an action one could take, perhaps. But if that anger, even watching TV, if that anger stays there and resides for a while, then it can become negative. And so it says you have to deal with it timely, especially if it's relational. Closer those relationships are, if we let it linger, then it becomes, something that can be very destructive. The reason that's given is in verse 27. It says, do not let the sun go down on your anger. And this second word shares the same root as the first, but it's not the same word, but it shares the same root idea. But this one has a prefix on it. So the first one was looking at a disposition of anger. This second word is more a state of being intensely provoked. So if you look at it, it says, be angry, that is, in a, have this disposition of anger, but do not sin and do not let the sun go down on your anger. And anger at that point becomes, not just a disposition, but becomes a irritation, a festering anger would be the idea here. So it's grown into something. So deal with it, or else it starts to spiral out of control and fester and become something else. The reason, then, is in verse 27. Do not give the devil an opportunity. There is something about anger, as opposed to some other things, anger that if we do not deal with it, if we let it set around, it starts to fester and it opens up a doorway for Satan. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 2. In verse 5 of chapter 2, it says, But if any has caused sorrow, he has caused sorrow not to me, but in some degree, in order not to say too much to all of you. Sufficient such a one is this punishment, which was inflicted by the majority, so that on the contrary, you should rather forgive and comfort him, lest somehow such a one be overwhelmed by excessive sorrow. Wherefore I urge you to reaffirm your love for him. For to this end also I wrote, that I might put you to the test, whether you are obedient in all things. But whom you forgive anything, I forgive also. For indeed what I have forgiven, if I have forgiven anything, I did it for your sakes in the presence of Christ. Purpose? In order that no advantage be taken of us by Satan, for we are not ignorant of his schemes. So here in this passage, it's a reluctance to forgive someone. You know, a stand had been taken, but this person has repented. It's a time to have restoration, but there's a reluctance. And Paul says, when that reluctance is there, it opens up a doorway, an advantage for Satan. Well, that's similar to what it's saying over here in Ephesians. Saying that if we let anger, even a righteous anger, fester, that we open up a doorway for Satan to enter in. Now, that's pretty scary. When you think about it, it all started because you had a right and proper attitude and response to something. But the proper response wasn't held in check and moved over and crossed the boundary and went askew, went off track and became sin, and it's not dealt with in a timely fashion, and it festers, and now Satan has a foothold. Verse 31, we have a shift. Same words, but a shift. Verse 31 says, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. We have two words in the middle here, wrath and anger, which are synonyms. Any efforts to really distinguish these words don't really get you that far, and they're probably forced on it because they're just basically synonyms, just as it would be in English, that it's wrath and anger. But the context here is the last word in verse 31. It says, along with all malice. Malice is what's controlling this whole passage. So it's anger with malice. It's not just that one is anger, not just that one has wrath. We've already seen that those can be a positive word. But when one has anger with malice, then it's always negative. And so, most of the time that we talk about being angry, it would be in this category. Most of the anger that we talk about isn't that we have a righteous anger. It's not an anger I have because, the right or truth and love have been so infused in my life that, you know, I find myself in conflict with what's going on, and that causes me to be righteously angry. It's out of, you know, my own self-protection, out of my own insecurities, something like that. I become angry, and there's an intent to hurt back, and that becomes the sense of malice. And malice, a malice type anger is always wrong and should always put off. It's now, not later. It's not deal with this timely. It's not deal with this before the sun goes down. It's always wrong. It needs to be dealt with at that moment. And so anyway, in this very few verses here, we have these two usages. One that doesn't speak of anger as always wrong. It says to be angry. But yet it puts it in a context and shows you even when it's righteous anger, there can be problems if one's not careful. Then another one just a few minutes later says, anger is wrong. Now, I want to restate once again that when you bring this into the sense of emotion, I think we have to be careful. Because when you say, you have an emotion, therefore you've sinned, I don't think there's any, I'm confident there's nothing in these kind of passages that is using anger in the way that we use it in that regard. But at the same time, even to have the emotion of anger puts you in jeopardy here. Because if you act on it, then you've moved out of the emotion of anger, you've moved into that state of anger. So any thoughts or insights, opinions on these passages? Now the question then becomes, with the first one that we're given this command, be angry, but do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger or wrath. What are practical ways we can utilize this? How do we put this, how do we take it out of that text and put it into a framework that gives us principles or directions or guidelines for life? What would be some? Okay, and that's an interesting term. So just even to, you know, rephrase it in the sense of saying, is this a constructive anger? Constructive in the sense of, is it motivating me to take an action, an appropriate action? And that's that. And that's one of the values of anger, is it motivates you to take action that you might otherwise not have taken.
James Dobson on Dare to Discipline, at least in the film series. I've never read the book, but in the film series, that's how old it was. It was a film. And I saw this right after I'd taught school for 5 years and went to seminary, and it was my first year in seminary when I saw these. He uses an illustration about a teacher that had concluded that the only way that he could get his students to do anything was to be angry. And it was pretty much a conclusion I hadn't come to. But anyway, Dobson goes on and gives some illustrations, and he, like with a parent, and saying that, and I kind of grew up with this, so I kind of identified with this, which was kind of interesting because my, especially Erica, more so than, or maybe exclusively Erica, I don't know if we ever have one with Megan, but with Erica, with her middle name is a term of endearment. So when I say Erica Joy, there's a closeness in that phraseology. Matter of fact, at the wedding, the only thing I struggled with in preparing for it, and even up to the moment we were walking down the aisle, was that on giving her away or something, in that phrase I was saying, Erica Joy. If I would have just said Erica, it was fine. But the middle name, you know, so it was different. But anyway, I grew up in a neighborhood when there was another Randy across the street, but it was in that middle name was used, that means we're serious. So Randy Bruce meant, anyway, so Dobson's using that as an illustration. And so finally the parent becomes angry and says, Randy Bruce, and the kid gets up and does, you know, right before the parent is fixing to take the axe and, you know, hit him in the head, the kid gets up and does it. And the parent concludes it was when they got angry. Dobson says it had nothing to think. It's when the child understood you were fixing to take action. But from the parent's standpoint, the anger was when they were at a point to take action. Though there it wasn't necessary, it was just take the action. But we don't want to misuse the idea that anger, you know, will cause you to take action, because it will. But even when it's right, you're to take action. And that could be one of the things when we find ourselves responding in anger, like when we're watching the news or hearing about a report of abuse, is say, what action should I take? You know, I'm angry. I should take some action. I should write somebody. I should call the DA and say, you know, this shouldn't be treated lightly, et cetera. Okay, what else? What are other principles or guidelines we could draw from this? I think there is a sense of that and some helplessness. I guess at times maybe there really may not be any action you can take in some situation. And maybe others, even though the action may or may not produce anything, maybe it would be good if we called the DA's office and said, I hope you really will pursue that. And there may be those like that where there is nothing one can actually do. It's not your responsibility. It's not within your realm of things. And it, maybe that's the appropriateness is the acknowledging the injustice. And I think in one sense you could look at the Psalms, and the psalmists do that in their laments. This is not right. And God, why'd you let this happen? But then at some point. And I don't know how long it took the psalmist to resolve all those things. I surely don't have the opinion they resolved it. He just started writing, and by the end, he was all resolved. But at some point, they're turning it back to God. So.
I think you have to put it on the hold button every once in a while.
Yeah. You realize you cannot do something about it, but it's. But I think within that context, to realize you're angry. And maybe even then become frustrated because you feel like, or reality is, there's nothing you can do about it. And then at that point, to realize the rest of this, okay, but even though this anger is righteous, I still have to process it timely. I got to deal with this now. I cannot let this linger on for a couple of days. I've got to deal with it now. And maybe the dealing with it now is, I can write a letter or I can't write a letter. I can turn it over to God. But even the positive things that fester can lead us off track. Other guidelines, principles? I think the timeliness one is really important, especially in relationships, and the closer those, not trying to say they don't matter. It's generally it has to be there. But the closer those relationships are, the more important it is that when we become angry, we need to deal with it. And I mean, even at that point, even without trying to stop and classify, is all this righteous anger? So we're angry in our, marital relationships, we have a fight or something. It's very likely none of it is righteous anger. But still, to say it has to, we got to resolve this. Because if we don't resolve it, you think about it. If righteous anger, not dealt with correctly, can open up an opportunity for Satan into your life, how much more so can unrighteous anger, not dealt with, open up an opportunity? So having that guideline of saying, almost as a rule that you've probably heard it sometimes, that you're never going to go to bed, angry, we're going to deal with that. Now, I don't know if that's always possible. I don't know if that's always, practical. I think there, but as a generalization, as a general rule, that's, what we ought to be saying. This has to be dealt with. You've got to get past this. Other things? And then the other one is to just look at this sense of anger. It is not anger management. It's put off. Our society's in this anger management. We're going to learn how to control our anger. The Scripture says nothing about controlling your anger. It says you got to get rid of this. Put it off. It comes from an old way of life. It's not who you are in Jesus Christ. And so that whole sense of anger has to do with somebody, something else controlling us. And that, some places we have to start, looking at that. What is controlling me? Why is the flesh controlling me? And we try to give everything a positive spin. And so, we come up with, anger management. We come up with these positive things to have these, flowery pictures around it. But scripturally says it's sin. And that's not a real, popular concept.